Now, we're holding on page 60 in Sanhedrin, Os Samach Zayin. Continuing with this, with a series of exchanges between Minim and the Chachamim. We had yesterday a Keser or Koifer. We had before and after that we had a Min. So we had an Amgusha and so forth. So now we have another one. The background, for this next one, we need a little bit of background. In Sefer Yechezkel, there's a number of things that Hashem tells Yechezkel to do, to act out things that are going to happen during the Churban and the Golos if the Jewish people don't do Tshuva. Hashem tells him, you're going to be a live example for them. They're going to see what you do, and they're going to learn from this, and they're going to realize from this what's going to happen. One of them we had actually earlier in this Masechta, a brief mention of that Yechezkel's wife passed away and he didn't prave the normal rules of Avelos, and that was meant to show the Jewish people what's going to happen at the time of the Churban. So now another one, early in Sefer Yechezkel in Perek Daled, Hashem tells him to set up a thing. He's going to lie on his left side for 390 days straight. And during that time, he's going to have only a small amount of food every day and not very appetizing food. Hashem tells him to take a bunch of different grains and mix them together to make a kind of bread. This is having the health food stores. The Ezekiel bread is based on that recipe because I guess they figured it's healthy. But in context, the idea is like during a siege, people don't have the ability. They're not going to bother picking out one kind of grain from another. They'll eat whatever's available. So therefore, Hashem tells Yechezkel to make a sort of bread like that, and he tells him to roast it over human waste, and at that, Yechezkel already protests. This was a few days ago in Daf Yomi, and Hashem says, fine, you can use animal waste instead. During that time, meanwhile, he's supposed to be acting out the siege of Yerushalayim, but he's supposed to be, the Pasuk says, he lies on his left side for 390 days straight, and then he lies on his right side for another 40 days. Now, there are Mephoshim who explain that this is not literal, that a person really do that. 390 plus 40 is over a year, well over a year. A person couldn't possibly lie immobile for that amount of time. So there are Rishonim who say that it means that Yechezkel was shown a vision of himself doing that, but the Gemara over here is taking it at face value that he actually did that. In Seder Olam, also Seder Olam is a collection of brises that explains topics on Jewish history. In Seder Olam also it takes it literally because it uses it to explain. If we look at the dates in Sefer Yechezkel, you find that the dates wouldn't work out for there to be 430 days when he was lying there immobile, unless that year was a leap year. So we see that there was a concept of Ibiyon. Well, we know there's a concept of Ibiyon to begin with, but we see that the Chachamim of that time in Bavel were responsible for declaring leap years, and they did declare one that year, and therefore that gives extra time for Yechezkel to finish these 430 days. Anyway. So now to the Gemara. So a certain min says to Rav Bohu, Elekechen Gachachon Hu. Your God seems to be a jokester, like he's just joking, he's playing around with his Nevi'im and making them do and then making them do silly things. He tells Yechezkel, he tells him, lie on your left side and then on your right side. This is what you do to a Navi. It sounds like Hashem is telling him, is playing a practical joke on him. Meanwhile, a Talmud came to Rabbi Bohu and he asked him, "My time of the Shvi'asa, what's the reason behind why Hashem commanded us to keep a mitzvah of Shemitah?" So Rabbi Bohu says to the both of them, to the Min and Lahavdil to the Talmud, "Hashda minalahu milsid the Shavi l'tayraichu. I will give you an answer that will answer both of your questions." The Shavya, Rashi explains, literally the Shavya would mean that's equal, but it can also mean that's effective, like Lamelach and Shoyva Lahanicham. So here's an answer that will be effective and will answer both of your questions. Let's start out. Why Shemitah? Omalam HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. So Hashem tells the Jewish people, Ziru Sheish V'Hashemitah Sheva, plant for 6 years and then make Shemitah during the seventh year, Kadesh HaTedusha Oretz Shalihi. So that you know that the land belongs to me. The Pasuk actually says, Ki Li Kol Oretz, that you have to realize the whole land belongs to Hashem. So that's the idea. In other words, the Gemara elsewhere calls Shvius Askaita de Malka. It's like the king's expropriation. Like a king, to a certain extent, you have that even nowadays with eminent domain or whatever, but back then, you could have all the more so where the king's ministers, the king's messengers could come to you one day and tell you that your field is forfeited and now belongs to the government. So that's in effect. Hashem does that every 7 years and says your land is forfeited to Hashem for the duration of the year. So that's how it's supposed to be. Vehein lo also came. And meanwhile, the Jewish people did not do that. Elochotu, they sinned, in particular by not keeping Shemitah, the Golu, and they ended up going into Golus. Now, what happens? Minhogish alolam, the way it normally works in a world, if people are going to disobey and rebel against the king, Melech Basav Adam Shasocha al Medina, if a province in his kingdom rebels against him, or disobeys him, or whatever, Imach Zorihu, if he's a cruel king, Hodegas Kulam, then he'll kill all of them. Im Rachmanhu, if he's more merciful, Hodeg Chetzion, then he kills some of them, half of them. Im Rachman Mole Rachmanhu, if he's really not only a merciful person, Rachman means a person who regularly shows the quality of Rachmanus. Al derech like you have a Gemara in Bav Metzia, for example, that mentions Roivitz Vole Ravzon. You have when it says you see somebody's animal Roivitz Tachas Masor that's lying down under its burden, so then you have to help him unload and reload it. But the Gemara says Vole Ravzon, not if the animal habitually does that. So we see from that a nun at the end of a verb like that means somebody who regularly does something. So Rachman means somebody who regularly exercises Rachmanus. They say a similar word when we say in davening on Yom Kippur, when we say that you have to sochel Yisrael or mochel on the Shivti Yishurin, that you don't just do it one time. You're not just seleach or moichel as maybe a one-off, but sochon and ra'an and mochlon, that you constantly do it over and over. Anyway, so Im Rachman, if he's merciful, if he's constantly showing mercy, Mole Rachmim, who, and he's full of Rachmim, Miyaster, Sagdolim, Shebehem, Biyasurim, then what he does is he afflicts the great ones among them with Yisurim, and with that he sort of takes out his anger on the whole province. The same way, Rabbi Bohu concludes, Hashem brought Yisurin on Yechezkel, made him lie on his left side and his right side for all those days and go through all these other hardships, in order to clean up and wipe out the sins of the Jewish people. Now, Maharsha points out, and this is a very nice answer, but Maharsha points out, this is hard to say, but this is an answer that satisfies both of them. It seems like two answers glued together. Number one, the reason for Shemitah, and number two, how a Melech acts to his subjects and how Hashem acts to the Jewish people. So Maharsha explains like this. So first, another question, as Hashem explicitly tells Yechezkel, the minister is familiar with the Pesukim after all, because he knows the story, and it says there explicitly that you'll lie on this side and you'll lie on that side, and with that, you'll bear their sins. So the min knows all of that. What's he asking, and how does Rabbo's answer satisfy him? So Maharsha explains like this. The question was, why those number of days? Why 390 and then 40? So Rabbi Bohu explains to him that those numbers are very precisely picked. Rashi on the Pesukim explains. We also have Rashi mentions it in Parshas Bechu Kosai in the Torchacha. It comes up in a few places. It's actually mentioned more Befedosh at the end of Divrei Yomim, that there were many years during which the Jewish people did not keep Shmitas and Yovlus. When you count up all the different times when it says Vayasu b'nei Yisrael haraba enei Hashem, you have during the period of the Shoftim, there'd be a certain number of years when they're doing that, and then there would be the Shoftim would come along and save them from their enemies, and then they would be completely devoted to Torah and mitzvahs during the rest of his term. Then he'd pass away, and the cycle would start all over again. So when you start counting up all those number of years in Shoftim by Yasu Ara, and then you have after the two kingdoms were split, and Yerovam and the Aseres HaShavatim seceded, and from then until the end of their kingdom was 240 some years, and throughout all that time they were Rishoyim, and they weren't the 10 Shavatim, that is, and they weren't keeping Shemitah. And then after they went into Golos, there was so far, in other words, if you count up the number of years in which they sinned and divide it to get the number of Shmitas and Yovlus, then you have forget about Shmitas and Yovlus for a second. Altogether, you can calculate 390 years during that whole period when they were doing Averis. By the time the Aseres HaShavatim were taken into Golos was from when they had entered Eretz Yisrael was 700 and some years. So 700 and some years. So during that of those years, 390, they had done Averis. So now, therefore, Hashem tells him, lie on your left side. The left is towards the north, because if you face east, as directions are usually given in Tanakh, then your left side is towards the north. So therefore, he's to lie on his left side for 390 days, representing the 390 years during which those Shvatim did Averis. And those are also the years when they didn't keep Shemitah. So in fact, so at the end of Divrei Yomim, what it says is that in the end, why were the 70 years of Golos Bavel? Is because altogether, throughout all those 850 years, as we learned a few days ago, it was 850 years from when they entered Eretz Yisrael until Churban Bayis Shlishi. During those 850 years, there were a total of seven. There were 69 Shmitas and Yovelos they didn't observe. And then they would have the 70th. They were in the middle of the last Yovel cycle when the Churban came, and that one is counted against them as well, which is why there were 70 years of Golos. So here, in a similar vein, then Hashem tells him 390 days corresponding one day per year corresponding to the 390 years during which the Aseres HaShvatim were doing Averis. Then Hashem tells him 40 days on your right side, the right representing the south, representing the kingdom of Yehuda and Binyamin, because after the Aseres HaShvatim went into Golos, during the period, there were from then until Churban Bayis Shlishi was 130 odd years, during of those years, there were 40 when they were doing Averis. 22 years of Menasheh, and then the years of Amon, and then Yahuyakim, and so forth. So altogether, you get another 40, they're altogether, actually, it was at that point when Hashem gave this nevuah to Yechezkel and told him all these instructions was 6 years before the Churban. Then there were another 6 years beyond that when they were still continuing to do Averis, and eventually the Churban came. So therefore, that's the 390 and the 40. So now then, so Rav Abahu is saying like this. So again, Hashem had given a mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel, and therefore, and now they have been violating it. So now, it could have been that they would completely go into Golos and completely be destroyed, both Beis Yisrael and Beis Yehuda. If not, then Hodeg Chetzim, then you would have had at least the 390 Beis Yisrael, the Aseres HaShvatim, would have been completely destroyed. Instead, Hashem has Rachmanos, has tremendous Rachmanos, so even on the Aseres HaShvatim, they were not completely destroyed. So instead, Hashem brought these Yisurim on Yechezkel, L'marit Abenisei, Mishal Yisrael. Yisrael, mentioned specifically, meaning Yisrael is in the narrower sense, the kingdom of Yisrael, the Aseres HaShvatim. So their Averis now, retroactively, were being cleaned up by Yechezkel's Yisurim. Now, why is it how, in what way do Yisurim of a tzaddik, in what way are they mechaper for the generation? So there's a number of possibilities. There can be parshat that the people themselves see that the tzaddik is suffering, and that itself motivates them to do tshuva. Sefer Chassidim talks about it sort of like the Midas Adin demands a certain justice, and therefore, like the tzaddik takes it on himself, and that way the Midas Adin is sort of satisfied that a judgment has been accomplished in the world. And the Maharal gives an explanation that the idea is, after all, the tzaddik is part of Klal Yisrael, so therefore he joins in. Al derech, like the way that tzaddik still says Oshamnu Bogadnu, even though he himself wasn't Oshem and Bogid, because he's part of the Klal. So in the same way, in other words, Yechezkel, even though he himself is a complete tzaddik, but he has on him a certain degree of the Averis of the Jewish people, and therefore his Yisurim are mechaper for Klal Yisrael in that way, because he himself is part of them as well. Rosh B'nai Yisrael, and he's the Neshama Klal. I don't know if Yechezkel is specifically the Neshama Klal of the Jewish people at that time. I mean, you also had Yumi, for example, but yeah. In any case, that's the idea. And there's also, you know, related to that, I mean, Shemitah is also, it's not something on the individual, it's also something on the Jewish people collectively, as we're saying, as Rav Abahu was saying over here. Hashem wants the Jewish people collectively to realize, as Rashi says, they shouldn't think they have such a beautiful land and forget about the yoke of Hashem's kingship. So therefore, it all kinds of goes together. There's supposed to be something on the klal to keep Shemitah and to remember that Hashem is the landlord of the land. And if they forgot it, then the klal has to suffer, and instead Yechezkel stands in for the klal and undergoes all of this. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amin says to Rav Abahu, Elekechem koyen hu. He says, your God apparently is a koyen. Dichtiv v'yikholi truma. As the pasuk says, they should bring to me a truma. Now, of course, the truma we're talking about over there is not truma from produce. The min is sort of taking words out of context over here. Truma over there means that you lift up from your possessions to give to Hashem, which is like truma from produce. So therefore, the guy is claiming on the basis of that pasuk that Hashem is receiving a truma from our produce. So the question is, Kitavil Moshe, the Mai Tovil. When he buried Moshe, what did he tovil in afterwards? In other words, this min figures, as Maharshal says, that he thinks of Hashem in a gashmiistic sense, which is like we had yesterday with the Kaser or the Koifer with Rav Gamliel, with how many Shchinas are there, because he thinks of the Shchina, he thinks of Hashem, and of the Shchina as physical things that can only be in one place at a time. And he has to And he has to explain to him that even within Gashmi, you have to have the rays of the sun, which can be in many different places at one time. So here, this Kofer, this Min, whatever you want to call him, Min, Mina is what the Gemara says. So he also has this mentality that Hashem is physical, and therefore, so a person buries somebody else, he becomes Tomei. And he's Tomei, he has to Tovel. Well, then what did Hashem Tovel in? Tosfos, by the way, brings up a point. Tosfos is not printed over here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos brings up a point. I mean, the Min could have asked, if Hashem is a Kohen, how could he bury Moshe in the first place and not allowed to become Tomei Mes? However, Tosfos says that's not such a big problem, because Bonim Atim L'Hashem Alekechem, we're children of Hashem. So therefore, if Hashem is a Kohen, then fine. A Kohen is allowed to become Tomei for his close relatives. Well, a Kohen Gadol. So what about it? So not a Kohen Gadol. So we'll get to that. We'll get back to that point soon. Yeah. Okay. So the chi tema b'maya. So the Min says you're going to say Hashem tovled in water. No, v'oksid min modad b'shal emayim. The pasuk says, who is it that measured out the water in the palm of his hand? Meaning, and so to speak, all the water that you could ever imagine exists can fit in, so to speak, in the palm of Hashem's hand. So there's not enough water for him to tovel in. So again, taking it with this distorted idea that Hashem is a physical body. Amalei said, Abahu answers him, Benura, Hashem toveled in, Benura toveled, he toveled in fire. Dichtiv, kihine Hashem ba'esh yoveh v'gomer, as the Pasuk says, behold, Hashem comes in fire. So in other words, you know, this guy is gonna talk in a silly way like that and claim that Hashem is a physical being and needs to toivel. So Rabbi Bohu is gonna answer him in his own coin, well then very well then, Hashem can toivel in fire. But the guy asks, me sauka to be Rusa Benura, there's no such thing as toiveling in fire. Toiveling by definition is in water. Omalei, and Rabbi Bohu answers him again, like to be doche him, adrabe ikut to be Rusa Benurahu. Adrabe, the real primary way of toiveling really ought to be in fire. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, kol dover asher yomer ba'esh ta'avir ba'esh v'tarah v'gomer, talking about the spoils, the dishes and things that they captured from in the war with Midian. Anything that is brought through fire, you should bring through fire and becomes pure v'gomer. V'chol asher yomer ba'esh, and anything that does not come in fire, ta'avir ba'moyim, you should pass through water. So now, again, Rabbi Bohu is also kind of taking the Pasuk out of context. Because the context of the Pasuk means when you have kalim that used to be used by goyim, so they absorb trefus from the goyim's cooking, so if it's something that's used directly with fire, that, like a grill or a spit or something, then taviru ba'esh for tahar, then you have to pass it through fire, you have to do libun and then it becomes tahar, and then you have to also tovel it after meydun yischata, and the Pasuk continues, anything that doesn't come into fire, so like pots and pans and things like that, which are not directly used with fire, taviru you put them in water, meaning you do hagolah to them. You do hagolah with boiling water. Kabolah kachpolta is the rule. However they absorb it is how they have to exude it. So that's the context of the pasuk. But Rabbi Bohu is kind of taking that out of context over here. Because the pasuk is not implying that the proper way to make something tahor is through fire, but if the guy is going to claim that Hashem is physical, then Rabbi Bohu is going to answer him in his own distorted way, using kind of also like a Rashi says, dechuya dachi, kind of like pushed him off without a real answer. The real answer is, of course, that Hashem is not aim like guf, aim like guf, or like musa guf, so there's nothing to talk about Hashem becoming tamei in the first place. With that said, though, all of this, I mean, The fact is that this is recorded in the Gemara, and as much as we have this, Min doesn't know what he's talking about. The fact is, it is recorded in the Gemara. It becomes part of Torah. This whole discussion and this dechuya dachya. Okay, so on one level, Rabbi Bohu is pushing him off, but on the other hand, the very fact that the Gemara took the trouble to record it means there's a truth to it beyond the surface. So there's a lot of different points in it. First of all, there's an interesting remez in it that the Mezitra Magid says, that Moshe represents Das. As we know, the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya that Moshe is the one who brings Das into us and makes us able to connect with the Eivishter. So in a deeper sense then, the Min's question is, Kikabrila Moshe, if a person's Das is buried, he doesn't have a way, he seems to have lost his connection with Hashem, but my Tovel, how should he Tovel, how should he get himself back on the straight path? And so Rabbi Bohu answers him that with fire. A person can have a fire of his slavos towards the Eivishter, and that will bring him back to where he needs to be and allow him to re-uncover that das. So that's a remez in this. Other than that, though, you were just mentioning that Hashem is not only a Kohen, as Tosfos says, but a Kohen Gadol. So there's actually the Zohar talks interestingly also about this idea of Hashem, so to speak, becoming Tomei to redeem the Jewish people. So the pasuk in Yeshaya, we read it as one of the Haftaras of Shiva Dinechemta, where Hashem says, so to speak, that he went to Edom and he's coming back over there with red bloodied clothing from having destroyed Edom, and he says, "V'chol malbushai egolti, I filthied and dirtied all my garments." So the Zohar explains the word egolti, which means filthy, is also related to the word geula. Hashem is saying to accomplish the geula of the Jewish people, Hashem is saying, I, so to speak, made myself dirty and bloody. So there's a sicha in Chelek Zayin, actually, four parashas Emor on this topic of Kohenim and Kohenim Gedolim becoming Tomei, where the Rebbe explains egg olti with an aleph. Aleph, gimel, aleph, lamed. Yeah, sometimes you have the word go'al with an ayin, which means disgusting also, like yule goyim. But yeah, here it's actually spelled egg olti with an aleph. So the Zohar relates it to the word ge'ula and says that it means that Hashem, to accomplish the ge'ula of the Jewish people, goes down and descends down into Edom and then kills them and destroys them and tramples them and everything and, so to speak, makes himself Tomei. So the Sicha in Chelek Zayin for Parshas Emor, where the Rebbe talks about the idea behind all of this is, after all, when we say that Hashem is a Kohen Gadol, it's a moshel, and the moshel has to be accurate as far as it goes, but after all, a Kohen Gadol is a Nivra, and Hashem is not, and therefore the moshel can't be 100% accurate, in particular when we talk about any limitations in the moshel, then those limitations aren't going to apply to Hashem. So what it means is, really, of course, Hashem doesn't become Tomei at all. But from the point of view that Hashem can be, that you can draw an analogy between Hashem and a Kohen, then we're saying that at that level, so to speak, we can talk about Hashem being Tomei, and then hence the Min's question, and therefore, and what the Zohar is saying, that Hashem will do that. So the Rebbe explains over there what it means is, within a Yid as well, you have a level that's a Kohen, you have a level that's a Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol level of a Yid, the Yechidah of a Nefesh, is really immune to Tumah altogether. Corresponding to that, at the level of Hashem being a Kohen Gadol, he's also immune to Tumah. So there's no talking, so there's no question, how could he bury Moshe, how could he bury Moshe of his Kohen Gadol? From the point of view of looking at Hashem with the marshal of a Kohen Gadol, he doesn't become Tomei in the first place. Only from the point of view of the Kohen, then we can speak of Tumah relative to him. Well, what that means is that it means Hashem is, so to speak, willing to allow some aspect of him to be described as Tomei in order to redeem from Golos and then from Tumah the aspect of a Yid, which is not on the level of a Kohen Gadol, but just on the level of a plain Kohen who is susceptible to Tumah. That's the gist of that sicha. And there's also a couple of Maimonim of the Rebbe Maharash that talk about the idea of B'chlal. When we talk about toiveling in fire, it mentions, for example, the Neshamas of the Tzaddikim are toiveled in Nahar Dinur, in the river of fire, before they come to a higher level. So we see there is really... In particular, the Neshamas of Tzaddikim, when they go from one level to... But also the Tzaddikim, when they go from one level to another. So we see there is this concept of toiveling in fire. And so therefore, so he explains also that when we talk about levels of Alakos that descend down and way down into our world, then we can talk about that, so to speak, for those levels, for those aspects of Alakos, that when we talk about them going back to Atzilus, going back up to Atzilus, then we can talk about them being toiveled in fire, so to speak, in order to reach back to that level, and therefore in that sense we can say Tvilus of Benura. Onward. Amalei Ahum Minu L'Ravavina. A certain min says to, now, by the way, as far as a couple of other things in this regard that we should mention, Marsha points out that, another possibility, another balabatisha answer, kind of, that you can answer to Tosfos' answer, if you say that Hashem is a Kohen Gadol, how could he terrible Moshe? The answer is he's not just his son, he's a mess mitzvah. There's nobody else available to bury him, and a Kohen Gadol can bury a mess mitzvah. There is an interesting vote I saw on this also, which is before the war with Midian, Hashem tells Moshe, "Nekoim niklas b'nei Yisrael me'esa Midianim, take revenge on the Midianim on behalf of the Jewish people. Acha te'osef alamecha, and afterwards you're going to be gathered into your people and you're going to pass away." So an interesting vote that I saw, that what Hashem is telling him is, we have to have this war with Midian in which there's going to be this pasuk about Kol Dovar Asher Yaveh Ba'esh and Asher Lo Yaveh Ba'esh Tavidu Bamoyim, because only then can you pass away. Otherwise, eventually, when this min comes up with this question to Rabbi Bohu, he won't have an answer. Because the pasuk that Rabbi Bohu is using as an answer comes from the war with Midian. So aside from the fact that we know Moshe had to be the one to do the war against Midian because he himself grew up in Midian, and because as you have in Kuntres Echotzu, because in Klipas Midian is Sinas Chinam, and Moshe specifically is the one who has to counteract that. But aside from that, you have this interesting idea that without the war with Midian, there wouldn't have been this pasuk, and then Rav Avohu wouldn't have an answer for the min, and then how Taka could Hashem bury Moshe and leave this question open? Okay. Onward. A certain min asks Rav Avina, who is like your nation, Israel, one unique people on the earth. So my Rabbo Sahu. So what's the big deal that you're saying that you're special? Atunami Aritu Badon. After all, you Jewish people are combined together with us also. You're saying you're Goya Chavaret. Fine, and there are many other nations, but Dichtiv Kol HaGoyim Kayin Negdo. The Pasuk says all the nations are like nothing before Hashem. So that includes you too. So what makes you, what do you think makes you so special? Now, Maharsha explains the question is not that it talks about that the nations, that some nations are going to disappear. La'asid lovek, yesa chala b'chala goyim, asher yidachticha shama, Hashem says, I'm going to eradicate all those nations, v'ois chala yesa chala, but Hashem says, you, I'm not going to. There's always going to be a Jewish people. So he's not asking about that. He's asking that nowadays, you goya chabaret, but you're not, because chala goyim ka'in negdoi. You should know it was one of your own guys, Bilam, who testified about us and said that we're the exception, as he says, that they're not counted among the other nations. So yeah, when we talk about Kol HaGoyim, it means all the nations except the Jewish people. So therefore it's not true. So therefore we are not in that rule of Kol HaGoyim Kayin Negdoi. Kid Rabbi Lozer, and this is like what Rabbi Lozer says, Rabbi Lozer Rumi. Rabbi Lozer pointed out a contradiction between the psukim. Siv Tov Hashem Lakol, you have a pasuk in Ashrei, Hashem is good to all, Uchtiv Tov Hashem Lakova, but you have in Echa, you have a pasuk, Hashem is good to those who hope for him, to those who look forward to him helping them and saving them. So what is it? Is Hashem good to everybody or just to some people? So he says, Moshal Adam, Shiyash Le Paradis. It's like a person who has an orchard. Mashke, when he waters it, Mashke es Kolei, then he waters the whole thing. There's no reason for him to make any exception between one part or another. He's anyway watering the whole thing. It doesn't really hurt to, it's all the same amount of effort to do all of it. So therefore all of them get the water. True Oider, but when he goes and hoes around them to dig around the roots, to aerate them, to whatever, to get rid of the weeds, Eina Oider, Ela Toivim Shebehem, then he does that only to the good ones among them. So the nimshal of it is, Because the hoeing, there's a tircha for everyone individually. So therefore, he only bothers with the ones that are good. The same way, yes, Hashem gives mezoinus, Hashem gives food and parnosa and everything to the good and to the bad. Everything is bedibur echad, memales kol olam kulei tova. Hashem just fills up the whole world with tova, because after all, everything is his. So to speak, there's no extra tircha to give to one versus the other, as opposed to just dispense it b'chlal. But when it comes to saving, to protecting from peronos and giving schar, then it's only l'koivav, only for those who hope and look forward to Hashem helping them. And Maharsha brings in this connection. Actually, this is now in the printed Gemara, you don't have these words Kid Rabbi Lozer and the Dalid, which means therefore in the printed Gemara there doesn't seem to be a direct connection between what Rabbi Lozer said and the previous thing. This is finished. Rabbi Avinah gave his proof to the gave his answer to the Min that we're not counted among the Goyim, and then separately you have the statement of Rabbi Lozer. But how do they really connect? So he says that here the gears that we have in any active is better for that purpose. What it means is like this: the Medrash Tanchuma on that pasuk of Agoyim Lo Yischashav explains. It actually brings it on the pasuk that when Hashem gives joy to the Jewish people, no other nation rejoices with them. We have our joy for whatever good thing Hashem did for us, and the Goyim don't participate in it. And vice versa, when they enjoy themselves, then we also benefit from the good that our host nations have with us. But nevertheless, it doesn't really count when it was still not counted among them. In other words, Hashem doesn't want that there, he goes on to bring from Medrash, from Yalkut Shimoni. Hashem doesn't want that the whole time in Golos we should constantly be sad and depressed. So therefore, when the Goyim, when our host nations have it good, then Hashem often makes it that we have good with them as well. You often find, for example, you often find that the place where most of the Jews were at any given time, or at least a large proportion of Jews, became a world power, and that's part of it. In other words, they have a good time of it in this world, and we benefit from it as well. But nevertheless, about Goyim lo yischashav. So now we're saying that, so again, Hashem is, so to speak, watering them as well. So he gives water and food to everybody, the Jewish people included with them. The Einim Eschashav Lahem, it doesn't count specifically as something for them, it's just in general for that country or whatever. But true Oyder, when Hashem is dealing on them with them on an individual basis, then it's only the Toivim, only the Koivav, only Toiv Hashem, the Koivav, to the ones who actually look forward and expect Hashem's help. So this drasha of Rabbi Elazar really helps explain, really goes very nicely with Rabbi Avinah's explanation of what goyim lo yischashav. It doesn't just mean that we don't count among the goyim in the sense that, as he's saying, you're saying kol goyim kain negdoi, but we Jewish people are not in that category. But it also means that goyim lo yischashav has another meaning in terms of how Hashem gives goodness to us and our host nations versus how when Hashem protects from dangers us versus them. The Mishnah had said, we got into this whole thing of the minim by way of the creation of Adam edition, which in turn was because the Mishnah had said, Lafichach Nivra Adam Yechidi, that Adam was created alone for a number of reasons, and therefore that got us into this whole discussion. All of that, we said, was part of the warning to Edim and Dinin Nefashis. The Edim may be about to testify falsely. So the Sanhedrin gives them a very stern warning to tell them that if they do, then they're going to be in big trouble because, among other things, every person is like an olam mole. So now, at the end of the Mishnah, it said that, on the other hand, the Beis Din tells them, if you're telling the truth, you might think, malon ul tzara azois, then why should we bother? Maybe we shouldn't testify and not cause the guy to be killed. So the Beis Din tells them, no, if the guy is in fact guilty, then ba'avod reshoyim rina, when the reshoyim are destroyed, then there is joy. So if the guy is in fact guilty, then you shouldn't feel bad that you testified and caused him to be killed, because then it's a good thing that he gets killed. So now let's talk about this. Now let's talk about this ba'avod reshoyim rina. Now you have like this in Sefer Melachim, it tells the story of Ahab's final battle. So Ahav is going to war against Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram. He has Yehoshaphat's army allied with him. They're fighting together. We'll talk about soon. There was a Navi named Michoihu who came there. First, you have a bunch of false Naviim came and told Ahab he's going to be successful in the battle. Later on in the Sechta, we'll learn about what caused that to happen. But in any case, then they bring Michoihu, a true Navi, and he says, I saw in Nevuah that all the Jewish people are scattered and their leader is killed, meaning that you, Ahab, are going to die in battle. Well, Ahav goes to war, and he has Michoihu arrested. He goes to war anyway. Eventually, as we're going to learn soon, the pasuk says one of the Arami, or the king of Aram, Ben Hadad, had given instructions to his soldiers to not try to kill anybody except Melech Yisrael. Some of Foshim explained because he was angry specifically at Ahav for starting the battle for what he considered was nothing. So he figures, I have nothing against the rest of the soldiers. Listen, they're just following orders, but it's all Ahav's fault. Another way of looking at it is that he overheard what had happened over there when the two kings are sitting together and Michoihu saying the Nevuah. He had had his spies there, and they overheard the Navi saying that only Ahav is going to be killed. So Ben-Hadad thinks to himself, you know what, I want that to happen. I'm going to try to make that happen. So the pasuk says that one of the Arami soldiers drew his bow and shot Ahav. So Ahav starts bleeding, and eventually he bleeds to death and he died there. So the pasuk says Vayaver Harina Bamachna. The Rina passed throughout the camp. Now, in the simple pshat, some of the Foshim explain that Rina just means the shout, like everybody's shouting and yelling, the king is dead. But usually the word Rina is a word that means a cry of simcha. And Rashi points out, doesn't it say Vayava Rina Bamachna? It's Vayava Hor Rina Bamachna, the Rina. So that means we have to be talking about a Rina that was already predicted long in advance that now finally came when Ahav died. So So what is it? This is as the pasuk says, "Va'avoid Rishoyim Rina." When Rishoyim are destroyed, there is joy. So that means "Va'avoid Achav Ben Omri Rina." Specifically, when Achav Ben Omri died, then there was this joy. So that's what. So now, when he died, in other words, so everybody was waiting. Everybody was waiting for a long time. And Rashi says, when already is Achav going to die, and this Rina will come. So now when he was killed, then now, the Rina that everybody had been waiting for a long time, that had been predicted by Shlomo HaMelech and Mishlei over 100 years earlier, finally came true. So in that case, what's Rishoyim in the plural? Rishoyim says, okay, because not just him, the fact is eventually all of Achav's family was wiped out as well. That came later. That's later on. This story with Achav himself getting killed is in Melachim Aleph, Perek Chavdeis. The part about Achav, the rest of Achav's family getting killed is later on in Perek Tesin, in Melachim Beis, Perek Tesin Yud. But still, it was the beginning of the end for them. Ben Yehoyada points out another point as well. The word Rishoyim, we can rearrange to form the letter Shin and the name Omri. Omri is the name of the father of Achav, Ayin Mem Resh Yud. So that's four of the five letters of Rishoyim. The Shin will stand for a word like Shalsheles, like the chain, like the descendants of Omri. So therefore, the word Rishoyim itself hints at Achav, being the son of Omri. Omri himself was a Rasha, Achav was an even bigger Rasha. So when he died, we're saying there was a Rina. So the Gemara asked him, really, though, is Hashem happy when Rishoyim have their downfall? Hashem would much rather they would do tshuva. We find a pasuk in that took place around that same period. This one happened with Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda, who was a contemporary of Achav. So the pasuk describes how at one point a whole coalition of nations invaded the kingdom of Yehuda, and Yehoshaphat gathers together the army, but he's afraid because his army is no match for theirs. Kapitel Pei Gimel of Tilim, by the way, if you look at the caption of it, we have Kinei Avecha Yamorinim Sanecha Nasirosh, and he starts listing a whole bunch of nations that are coming to attack. So in the caption there, in the Or Yosef Yitzchak Tilim, it says that's about this war of Yehoshaphat's times. Anyway, the upshot is that a Navi comes and tells them, you don't have to fight them, Hashem will fight them, Hashem will cause them to fight each other, you just stand there and watch. So the pasuk describes, but says lifnei acholot, so when they go, they have the Koyanim going out before the vanguard of the army, and they're going, instead of going with weapons, they're going with songs of praise to Hashem, because they're singing in advance to Hashem for the nest that's about to happen. So B'tseis B'fnei Acholos, when they were going out in front of the vanguard, in front of the shock troops of the army, V'omrim, they would say, Hodu L'Hashem ki la'olam chastai. Now, the usual is, Hodu L'Hashem ki toiv ki la'olam chastai. V'om Rav Yenison, nickname Ma'alei Nemabar, Dozu ki toiv. Why over here did they not say ki toiv, like we usually have? And the reason is, L'fisha ena kodesh bochus sameach ma'palos ansho Rishoyim. Because Hashem is not happy about the downfall of Rishoyim. So therefore, we can't say ki toiv the same way. For example, as it says about on the second day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, it doesn't say ki toiv. And one reason is because Gehenim was created on that day. So the same way, they couldn't say ki toiv. It's not good in Hashem's eyes that we should. So fine, we thank Hashem for the nest that he does, and he destroys our enemies, but we don't say ki toiv on that. Marshall explains, what does it really mean when we talk about Hashem being happy? It means that Hashem's will is being accomplished. And we know Hashem, that we have a pasuk from Yechezkel. We say it in Ne'ilah. Tila echbetz b'moysa rosha. I don't desire the death of the rosha. Kim b'shuv midracha v'choya. So therefore, in token of that, they didn't say kitoiv. And we see that in turn. The Amr of Shmuel bar Nachman, Amr of Yonasan. What does it mean by Kriyas Yamsuf when it says this one did not approach that one all night? What's the this one and that one? Pasha Trat, of course, it means the Jews and the Mitzrayim. It's before. It's a few pilkum before Oz Yashar. But what's the deeper meaning of it? The Malachi Asharis wanted to sing Shira before Hashem. But Hashem tells them, the handiwork of my hands, after all, the Mitzvim are also human beings. They were also created by the Eivishter. They're drowning in the sea, and you want to say Shira before me? So we see that Hashem is not happy when the Rishoyim are destroyed, and so we see from these two psukim. So why are we saying Vayava Harina Bamachna that they were all happy and joyful when Achav died? The answer is Amar of Yosef Ben Chanina, who ain't a sos avalachedem mesis. Hashem himself is not happy when the Rishoyim die, but Hashem allows others to be happy.
What do you mean
Meaning, in other words, like this. So Hashem will cause others to allow others to be happy. So like this, the Jewish people are going to be happy. When Achav dies, gizunt dehet. Hashem condones that. But for him himself to be happy, then not. Dekanami, dechtiv. In fact, we can see this more clearly in the, we can see this more clearly in a pasuk, dechtiv, you have in the Torah, v'hoya kasha sos Hashem agomer. The pasuk says, as Hashem rejoiced over you to give you all kinds of good, and the pasuk continues, ken yosis Hashem aleichem, the same way the pasuk says Hashem will be happy over you to be destroyed. But tziv yosis, v'lo tziv yosus. Now, if it meant that Hashem himself is happy, it would have said yosus. But instead it says yosis, which is a transitive verb, he causes others to be happy. So we understand in the pasuk now, as Hashem was happy over you to give you good, the same way now when you're doing averus and deserve punishment, Hashem will allow and cause others to be happy at your downfall. But Hashem himself will not be happy because otherwise it would have said yosus. So in the same token, therefore, Hashem didn't want the malachim to say shira. On the other hand, the Jewish people themselves, of course, said shira. They did say oz yashir. Because after all, they themselves had just been saved. Marsha has some discussion about it. First of all, maybe there's only a problem with Hallel, but not Oz Yoshu. There can be a difference between them. In fact, that's a reason why we don't say Hallel, why we don't say full Hallel last 6 days Pesach. We don't say it on Shvi'i Shel Pesach because of this. Ma'aseh Yod Tov, one reason, the Gemara and Erchin brings a different reason, but one reason that's brought by a lot of Rishonim is because, as we're saying, Hashem is not happy when the Rishoyim dies, so Shvi'i Shel Pesach we can't. And if we're not going to say full Hallel, Shvi'i Shel Pesach, we're not going to say it during Chol HaMoed either, because Chol HaMoed shouldn't be better than Shvi'i Shel Pesach. But therefore, so that's the answer, that Vatava Arina Bamachna, Vayava Arina Bamachna, there was a Rina from the people, but Hashem himself did not participate in that Rina because he would have rather see that Achav should be able to do tshuva. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGo'olah, Galad Sivan. The time of Tchiyas HaMeisim that Rebbe talks about in the Sicha is on Erev Shabbos. So again, this was in connection with the Sicha when Hecht from New Haven passed away on an Erev Shabbos, and the Rebbe spoke a whole Sicha about the significance about it. So the Zohar brings that the La'es Erev, the Pasuk says, V'hoya La'es Erev Yeor, towards the evening, there will be light, and the Zohar explains, La'es Erev means Friday, which is Erev Shabbos, that's the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim, and the Zohar is talking about is actually when it says, when Eliezer came and saw Rivka, La'es Erev, and towards the evening, La'es Tzeis HaShoyevo, it says, the girls were coming out to draw water, so La'es Erev, the Zohar explains means Erev Shabbos. La'es Tzeis HaShoyevos means when the Tamar HaChamim, who draw forth from the water of Torah, on Erev Shabbos is the time when they will come out and then shake themselves off from the dust and come alive by Tzeis HaMeisim. Continuing on Halachos and Halachos of Tzitzis, we've been talking about various cases where a corner rips off. So what happens, you put the tzitzis, and we've learned before there's supposed to be a certain minimum and maximum length, certain minimum and maximum distance from the edge. What happens if the hole then gets bigger and you wind up that now the tzitzis are hanging closer to the edge of the talus? So if you put on the tzitzis beforehand, before it got ripped, then there's no problem. There's no kesher agudol, there's no the length of the first joint of the agudol that we learned before, because that shear only applies when the tzitzis are first being put on, as we learned before. So now it ripped and it's lower down later, then you're fine. Similarly, also, if it ripped and there's some of the fabric left and you sewed it up and then put the tzitzis, it would also be kosher, even though you don't have the kesher agudol aside from the sewed part, because to that extent we do consider the sewed part to be whole, even according to, we learned before, that stitches in that three gudlim may be a problem, but here it's not a problem because there is some part that didn't rip. What happens if the whole part ripped? That we'll learn in the next bit, Bezdashem.